This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Coming strong with another edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howe. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we thank you so much for continuing to support everything we've got going here with the Longhorn Blitz podcast. Multiple ways to get this podcast, but the best way is anywhere you get your podcasts. Search Horns 24/7. That's Horns 247. No dashes, slashes, or spaces. Click that follow button, get every episode of The Blitz when it drops on Wednesdays. And if you'd be so kind, please leave us a 5-star review. I apologize for the nails clicking on the floor in the background. My dog, Daisy, figured it was time that she needed to be involved in the presentation. So she's
more than welcome. We're a dog-friendly show.
She's an old dog, and she heard voices, so she's got to make sure the perimeter is secure. So,
you probably woke her up by yelling.
I probably did. So she's giving me that look like I just woke her up and she now got to go find a soft place to lay down. But yes, we are a dog-friendly show because we are all dog people on this show, including the first member of our team I will introduce. He is the master of the soundboard, the drop machine extraordinaire, our lead research analyst on Longhorn Blitz, and a daily fantasy guru. He is Matt Butler. How are you today, sir?
Doing pretty well, man. How about you?
I'm good, Matt. Real quick, have you tried to get into I know Fanatics is messing around with, I think they're just doing straight gambling. I don't even think they're doing the daily fantasy thing. Have you messed around with the sports card breaks at all? Like that, the whole process of getting into those? It's like basically it's pretty much a legalized form of gambling is what it is.
Yeah, I had heard some of them a couple years ago advertised on some of the daily fantasy shows, but I really hadn't collected cards since I was a kid. I still have so many cards from back in the day. Me and my cousin thought we were going to be millionaires with all the different cards we had, but then the market wasn't exactly what you thought it would be. But still, I always had a nostalgic love for cards, but haven't really invested in them other than when the local card shop probably 15 years ago over in Oak Hill was going out of business and I went and hoarded some, but that was probably my last deep endeavor into cards.
Yeah. I know you're into the sports gambling side, and I'm trying to get on Fanatics Live, trying to get into some of these breaks. Y'all quit buying the Astros so I can get into one of these breaks. Everybody keeps buying the Astros out from under me. A man who loves the Astros. He loves daily fantasy. He loves sports betting. He's a pop culture critic, if you will. He wears so many hats in the many jobs that he has. But for the purposes of this podcast, he is our lockdown corner here on Longhorn Blitz. The lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, fourth round draft choice of the New York Giants back in 2003, spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL. When he was done with football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas, in the 40 acres where he earned his degree. Whenever that T-ring comes back in, we will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU, and when you get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they make sure you get one of those black cards. Number 21 in your program. Number one in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers. Rod, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for the intro, as always. I appreciate it.
Rod, just going to give you a chance to promote a new morning show, a little new morning show dynamic over at the Horn these days.
Yeah, man. Me and my man Patrick Davis actually doing the show together. It's the Rodcast, but it's a Rodcast with a co-host, and my man Patrick Davis co-hosting it with me. on from 6 to 10 a.m. on the Horn. You get the Horn app, of course, or you can listen on radio, terrestrial radio, AM 1260. You can also listen at 101.9, if I'm not mistaken. So there's some ways, but the Horn app is the best way to do it. Or you can go online. You can stream the show online. You can go on YouTube at hornfm.com. You can stream it, or you can go on YouTube and you can watch the show actually on our YouTube channel. So plenty of ways for you to consume it. Got a new morning show going, so it's been fun so far.
Rod, I'm not gonna lie, there's a pretty significant part of my soul that feels like all is right in the world when the Rodcast is alive and thriving.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. It's been a little while, but the like the Rodcast at one point, man, it was just me solo, but at least now I got a partner to work with, like you guys. So I got somebody reliable.
Whenever people stop me in Gen Pop and they're like, man, what's it like working with Rod Babers? The first thing I tell them, Rod, it's not about your NFL experience or anything. It's, man, I wish y'all could see the level of preparation and dedication Rod puts into his craft. Like it is. It's unmatched, honestly.
I appreciate that.
And I'm glad the Rodcast is back, because the Rodcast to me symbolizes how hard you work. Because I don't think people realized to do multiple. You were doing what, three or four? I think you were doing four by yourself at one time, right?
At one point I was, yeah. I was doing a 4-hour show by myself, which is crazy. Insanity.
To do 4 hours by yourself in drive time is, I don't know anybody else that could do. I mean, unless you're, you know, like a Mike Francesa who was just doing nothing but taking calls. I don't know anybody that could do 4 hours just straight up just spitting knowledge for 4 hours. So
yeah, man, it's insanity. And I'm honestly, I wouldn't advise it. I wouldn't advise or suggest that for anybody else, honestly. But yeah, man, I honestly, it's what helped me perfect the craft. It really did. I mean, when I have to do those hours by myself, my worst nightmare is to have a segment where I'm on mic and I don't have preparation and I don't have, you know, the actual information to offer up, and I just got to freestyle it. I don't freestyle, because that is my nightmare. That's everybody's nightmare on a microphone. What you want is you want to be prepped and ready to go. You almost want to have way too much prep for the show. And then the shows go by easy and then they go by fast. And then you're upset because, damn it, I had great nuggets. I had great information that I didn't share with the people. And that's my problem now most of the time. I'm like, damn it, I forgot to share this trend or this pattern or this stat or this fact. I'm like, man, that would have really put everything together. So most of the time, that's my stress and my worry, is that I've done enough prep where I leave out what I think kind of crucial nuggets that really could have painted the picture for the people.
Yep.
But you've been able to paint the picture real well, because you fit it within the conformity of radio, and being able to do that in little bite-sized nuggets is really impressive, but always captures the audience. So if anybody's driving around, they definitely should be listening in.
Well, so Rod, congratulations for getting the Rodcast back on. That's a great thing.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
Anytime it comes to matters dealing with the National Football League, Rod, I lean on you first and foremost. And then Matt, I know anything I need NFL numbers wise, Matt's going to give me plenty of what I need. So I'll ask both of you guys this. When we look back at the combine, and we're not going to full on break down the combine because that's been done ad nauseum, but give me and use analytics, use numbers, use eye tests, whatever you want. Give the people reason to believe that Xavier Worthy can have an NFL career, let's say more akin to Devontae Smith, if you want just a lazy comp for lean, fast wide receivers, that he'll be more Devontae Smith than John Ross at the next level.
Yeah, I would say, because that is a concern, right? The truth is, and I can give you the numbers here, because I went back and looked them up when I saw Xavier Worthy run that time. Now, I remember saying before that I want him to run fast, but I don't want him to be the fastest.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of history of success with really fast receivers at the combine. There just aren't.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the real question is, can Xavier Worthy be a 1,000-yard receiver at the NFL level? You go look at the top 25 fastest receivers at the NFL combine. Since they started keeping track of it, which is roughly, you know, sometimes it's like 1999, sometimes it's like 2003, my first year at the combine, which makes me feel even older. That's the year they go back to as like the year of the modern combine, the beginning of it.
Hey, man, at least you're in the modern era.
At least exactly something still in the modern era. But when they look at the top 25 fastest receivers at the NFL Combine, you know, how many of those guys do you think actually, you know, caught 1,000 yards or actually had 1,000 yards receiving in the NFL? It's only one. It's only one. And that was Santana Moss. That's it. He's the only 1,000-yard receiver from a group of the top 25 fastest 40-yard dashes at the NFL Combine. And that's because we know that football speed is very different than, you know, your play speed and performance speed, which is usually your, you know, optimal speed, is different than actual football speed. And that's what you're testing at the combine, is the optimal speed. How fast can this player actually move with in a controlled environment, you know, without having to worry about putting on pads and without the actual game conditions and circumstances? And Xavier Worthy, I think he plays fast. As a matter of fact, Les Snead said that. Les Snead, the GM for the Rams, who has a son that plays on the Texas team, he said that not only Xavier plays fast, but he actually, you know, he is fast. He runs a 40, yeah, but he's just not a guy to run 40. His speed actually translates. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. And he said that essentially Xavier Worthy is one of the fastest human beings he's ever evaluated, period, as a scout and a personnel man in the NFL. But the question is, does that type of speed translate to the NFL? And what recent history will tell us is it doesn't, right? It doesn't necessarily matter if you're running a 4.2 or if you're running a 4.4 in the NFL. What matters is all the other elements of being a receiver. That speed is just one data point. Now, that one data point will probably, because it's overvalued, it will increase your draft stock more than any other, especially at the wide receiver position. It'll increase your draft stock more than any other drill or any other workout, period. Mm-hmm. That if you can just run a really fast 40, that'll increase your draft stock. But the truth is, it doesn't translate to NFL success or NFL productivity. Do I believe that Xavier Worthy is going to be a good receiver in the NFL? I do believe that. I've watched enough of him to know that his size and his, you know, the frame that he has, that I don't think it's going to work against him. I think he has really good play strength. I think he plays through contact really well. But if you go look at receivers who have his frame, which is, I look at BMI, right? Body mass index, combination of weight and height. So it's a cumulative index. And right now, I believe Xavier Worthy measured in 165 pounds, if I'm not mistaken, at the combine, right under 6 foot. He's a little over 5'11". That gives him a 23 body mass index, which makes him the ninth lightest receiver at the combine since 2000. So he's the ninth lightest receiver. He's just light, slight. Sark's got a type, right? He likes small, skinny-ish, speed demon receivers. Mm-hmm. If you look at the top 50 lightest receivers in BMI at the NFL Combine, you want to know how many have caught 1,000 yards receiving in the NFL? Just one. Just one. Yeah. DeSean Jackson.
I was about to say DeSean Jackson. 5,
now,
10,
Devontae Smith, remember, guys, Devontae Smith did not work out at the Combine.
Right.
It was a pro day workout for Devontae Smith. So the truth is, Devontae Smith should be in that category. So if you're Xavier Worthy, you got three examples before you that you want to try to live up to. Santana Moss, who's the only 1,000-yard receiver among the top 25 fastest receivers at the NFL Combine in history. And now you're the fastest in the history of the Combine. Congratulations. Devontae Smith, who won the Heisman, a slight receiver, who's Steve Sarkisian, all right, weaponized to the point where he won the Heisman. So Steve Sarkisian's got the blueprint on these little smallish speed demon receivers. Mm-hmm. He has a type. You look at all my ex-women over my time of dating. I probably got a type, too. You'll probably know it's a trend. Big booty brunettes. Well, you know it's a trend in Sark's background, too. He likes smallish speed demon receivers who have a slight frame. So he wants Santana Moss in the speed. He wants Devontae Smith, and he wants DeSean Jackson. That's who I think Xavier Worthy's got to aspire to be in the NFL. The question is, will Xavier Worthy be a 1,000-yard receiver? Because the recent history of the NFL and the odds are against him being a 1,000-yard receiver, even though I do believe he's got that ceiling. If he is drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs, which he has been mocked to, by the way, in Lance Zierlein's latest mock draft, Mel Kiper's draft before, if you go before the combine, Mel Kiper had him mocked to the Kansas City Chiefs, and the latest mock draft from Jordan Reed over at ESPN also has Xavier Worthy going to the Chiefs. If he goes to the Chiefs, hell, he's not only going to be a 1,000-yard receiver, he may be on his way to being a Hall of Fame receiver potentially if he ends up with the Kansas City Chiefs, the best play caller, head coach, and best quarterback in the NFL, and the best GM in the NFL, in my opinion, and the best DC in the NFL, in my opinion. Probably the worst owner. That was voted on by the players, not me. So that would be my take. Can he be a 1,000-yard receiver in the NFL? That is the question, because recent history suggests that he won't be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you look at the names you brought up in the comparisons, like DeSean Jackson fits the mold almost perfectly. It's as if, you know, Xavier Worthy's actually just a more evolved, more, you know, a modern version of him, because he's 5'10", 175 was the most recent DeSean Jackson later in his career, but he had 5 1,000-yard seasons. But when you look back at his combine results, he ran a 4.35. And then when you combine, say, a 10-inch broad jump in a 1.55 10-yard split, gave him an athleticism score of 80. As you see, Worthy blows those out of the water. He had a broad jump of 10.11, almost a foot further. He had a split of 1.49. And then you didn't have Jackson go through the vertical, and Worthy's 41 verticals good to where when you look at the athleticism score that NFL.com on the combine gives him, it's a 98. Like, he grades out as the number one receiver in the entire combine, like better than everybody else that worked out. So that's some elite company to keep. And like, there was another guy, and it's another Sark receiver, but you had Henry Ruggs before all of his legalities and getting thrown in jail, and deservedly so, but he ran a 4.27 coming out, and he had a 10.11 broad jump with a 1.43 split, to where Sark really has sort of found that little mold between, like you said, Devonta Smith would have put up those type of metrics, would have been most similar to Worthy. So there's some more modern comps. I think the way that the NFL's evolved away from your prototypical receiver to understanding that you don't necessarily need to have somebody to be a certain size to fit inside the mold. I didn't pull up Ted Ginn's numbers, but I wanted to look at some of them too. But Worthy's way more complete. And like, even DeSean Jackson, a guy that stayed away from contact, like Worthy there, I remember one of the last receptions he had in the Oklahoma State Big 12 championship game, when you could tell the DB thinks that Worthy's going out of bounds, and he just tries to obliterate through him at the line of scrimmage, to where like, you have certain things that the NFL looks at, and like the functional speed that Jeff brought up earlier. Like, I haven't found all the numbers. I don't think they're all public yet from the Next Gen Stats on the gauntlet score, but the thing that they added where like, they had receivers, you know, catching balls from multiple directions while running across the field. And, you know, some guys were going the 17 miles an hour, the 18 miles an hour. But, like, when you look at the most functional guy in last year's draft, Puka Nacua was running it over 20 miles an hour while catching balls. So, like, that was a functional score. And those were the type of things that when you combine the functionality of a player like Worthy with his speed, then it's a guy that can really grade out much better.
Yeah, to that point, and that's why – people like Keon Coleman is supposed to be this year's Puka Nacua, right? Because Puka Nacua last year, just to your point, he's the guy that ran the 20 miles per hour in the gauntlet drill, but I believe he was clocked at 4.57, right? Kind of Jerry Rice type area of speed. But Sean McVay, who's one of the brightest minds in football, Sean McVay pounded the table. I love this guy. He was saying it before the draft. This is my guy. Love this guy. We can get this guy. He's going to be awesome. So he identified certain other traits that he thought would contribute to him being a productive wide receiver at the NFL level. And this year, that's supposed to be Keon Coleman from Florida State. He ran a really slow 40, 4.61, which is plodding. I mean, that is slow, considering this was the fastest wide receiver combine in NFL history. You had, I think the average speed for the wide receivers was 4.44. You had 9 wide receivers ran under 4.4, but the average score was, average speed was 4.4 in the 40, fastest ever in the modern combine. So he ran the slowest, one of the slower 40s in the fastest 40. So it was even more, I think it stood out even more, right? I think it was even more of a negative data point for him because everybody else was running so fast. So it seemed even more drastic. But his score in the gauntlet, to Matt's point, was a 20.36 miles per hour speed in the gauntlet drill, which I believe was the fastest among wide receivers. So he ran one of the slowest 40s, like Puka Nacua, but he ran the fastest gauntlet drill And I think there are a lot of NFL scouts out there that are looking at Sean McVay's evaluation of Puka Nacua and saying this year's Puka Nacua is Keon Coleman, because now we have technology. This is my point about the 40. While the 40 is pretty, it's overvalued. It's still an important data point evaluation, but it's extremely overvalued. It's the main event of the NFL Combine, and the NFL turns everything into a TV show, and that's why the 40-yard dash is the main event of the TV show. But now you do have the ability to track guys' speed when they run a route. You have the ability to track guys' speed as they're catching the ball. You have the ability to track a player's speed in-game. And Xavier Worthy was tracked as the fastest ball carrier in college football this year by Real Analytics at 22.7 miles per hour. Now, he did hit 24.2 miles per hour, I think, in his 10-yard split out of his 40-yard dash. So that guy is just moving. But I think now there are smarter coaches in the NFL figuring out, yeah, the 40-yard dash is just one data point. It's not the data point in evaluation, and especially at receiver. Receiver is about creating separation. I heard D'Amico Ryans, when he was asked, hey, man, what do you look for in the receiver? He said, I look for separation. And when he said that, I was like, damn, that guy, that's a football coach. He understands what it's about. Watch Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce does not run routes, guys. He does not run routes. There are no right angles. There are no hard angles. He's just running to get open, right?
Yeah, find spots.
DeAndre Hopkins doing the same thing. There are some guys out there who run precision routes. I'm not saying anything's wrong with that, running precision routes. But the truth is, route running is all about creating separation. That's the art of route running. However you do it, with precision route running, with hard angles, or if you're being efficient, which I think Xavier Worthy is, or you're just running to get open because you and your quarterback have a great chemistry. So whatever it may be, you got to create separation. And I do believe Xavier Worthy can do that. But that's why being fast as a wide receiver is like being well-endowed as a lover. It's one thing. It'll help you be a great lover, but it's not the end-all, be-all. There's still a lot of other things that make you a great lover rather than being well-endowed. Same thing with speed. It's exact same thing, in my opinion. Great speed does not make you a great wide receiver. You have a lot of other subtle nuances that you must be able to master within that craft to become a great route runner and somebody that can create separation consistently.
Yep, and on that gauntlet score aspect, I went through and all I could find were the top five wide receivers, and X didn't rate inside there. Keon was one, and Romo Odunze was third. But since we brought it up, I wanted to mention one other Longhorn. Ryan Watts obliterated every other cornerback in the entire field. Ryan Watts was at 19.89. Second place was like 18.54. Nobody else got over 18.54. There were like four other guys right in that bunch. But, I mean, Ryan Watts is head and shoulders above every other cornerback in that drill, which seems to be maybe the better way to gauge a guy's read and reaction ability with a ball in the air and maintaining that speed and processing.
I was just looking up DeSean Jackson, and, you know, right, all of us can remember, because it's kind of in the, you know, our adulthood watching football, Santana Moss was cut from a different cloth. I mean, Santana Moss was 180, 185 pounds, and almost like was a running back playing wide receiver. Just Santana Moss was different. I didn't realize Santana Moss had over 10,000 career receiving yards. It's a great career.
Yeah, same with DeSean Jackson at over 11,000.
Well, but here's what I was looking at with DeSean Jackson. I looked at DeSean Jackson's 1,000-yard seasons. Would you like to know who was calling his plays in each of those 1,000-yard seasons?
Andy Reid. And Shanahan.
Hold on. Andy Reid, Chip Kelly, and Sean McVay in Washington.
Yeah.
There you go.
Guys that knew how to use his speed. And because he's got functional speed, that's why DeSean Jackson was able to succeed.
That's money. That's a great point, Jeff. You're right about that, man. That's why, to me, it's all speed is a preference thing. If you really, really like speed, what Sark does, all right, then, you know, recruit speed. Sark knows how to identify it, and Sark knows how to weaponize it, right? Yeah. He also knows how to weaponize small-ish receivers. You pointed out, Jeff, on Twitter, he's coached the two fastest players at the NFL Combine.
Yeah.
John Ross and Xavier Worthy. That is not a coincidence. And it's not a coincidence that one of the smallest wide receivers in the history of the NFL, and Devontae Smith, also can go to the NFL and have success. But that was because Sark provided the blueprint. I'll give you a stat about these small guys. I think I shared this with you guys before. 20 wide receivers drafted in the first two rounds. and since 2000 with a BMI, body mass index, of 25 or less. Guys, nine of those have been since Devontae Smith was drafted, which means, right, you had 21 years where the NFL only drafted 14 wide receivers in the first round with a 25 BMI or less. And in the last 3 years, they drafted 10 in the first round. What does that show you? Well, they're changing their opinion a little bit about how to utilize and weaponize these small-ish receivers. They basically liked these small-ish receivers back in the day, but they didn't love them. If you love a receiver, you take them in the first two rounds. If you like them, you wait to try to get them in the middle rounds, third, fourth, fifth round, somewhere around there. And that's what teams used to do with these small type receivers. But now I think there's a playbook out there. And by the way, I'll give Sark a lot of credit. I think part of the playbook is his playbook of how to use these guys, targets to motion, putting them in motion, bunch formations, you know, clustered groups of receivers so that they can't get their hands on these guys. And I think teams have, because it's a copycat league, they have taken these concepts, siphoned these concepts. Andy Reid, as you pointed out, he likes smallest receivers too. Hell, even with the Kansas City Chiefs, Kadarius Toney, right, bringing in small, speedy guys. That's what he likes. And that's why people are now linking up Xavier Worthy with Andy Reid, because it makes sense. They're compatible. But don't make a mistake about it, guys. Steve Sarkisian changed the way that NFL scouts and NFL coaches view these types of wide receivers when he turned Devontae Smith into a top 10 pick and a Heisman Trophy winner. He is a part of that narrative now, and a big part of it is because Steve Sarkisian has a type of wide receiver he likes. Look at the guys he just brought in the transfer portal. They all seem like the same type of receivers. Small, speedy, slight-ish guys. That's his type, and he knows how to use them, and he's teaching NFL coaches how to do the same thing.
Yeah,
that's why I was so excited when I first saw like Silas Bolden's numbers, because like when you look at him, he's so tiny when you just look at like his frame, like he's like 5'8 or something. He's like 160 pounds. But then his contested catch ability is as elite as it gets when you look at his percentage of contested catches for last year or his career. And then when you look at him, he lines up on the outside like 83% of the time. So like everybody thinks he's just some diminutive little slot guy. It's like, no, this guy is going to be used as like a feature guy because he has that top end speed. And like before it, like there were just a handful of guys that like we've talked about, DeSean Jackson, who dates back to like what, 2007. Ted Ginn, when you look at him, he didn't work out at the combine, but he was 5'11", 167 at the combine. He did get measured. And then when you go and he claimed that he ran a 4.22 in college, but the lowest track time you could ever find was between 4.37 to some people say 4.28 at his pro day, which is sort of similar. And Ted Ginn, like they said, I saw a thing the Panthers had tweeted out in 2017. He was still hitting 22 miles an hour, which was like at the beginning of the next gen stats. That's according to the Carolina Panthers on their YouTube account. But I mean, to maintain that and keep that around, Ginn was, he played for 15 years and it was a lot more physical in those late 2000s for guys like Jackson and Ginn to be able to withstand it. So it just makes you feel even better about the chances of Worthy. And if anything, Worthy size is only going to make it better because, as you mentioned, if he ends up with the team like the Chiefs or the way you see these mocks having AD and Worthy both being guys taken in that 20 through 30 range, like teams like the Bills or teams like the Chiefs trying to get a guy to fit with a franchise quarterback, those actually would be the most optimal landing spots than, say, going to a place that's trying to develop a young quarterback that isn't going to be able to help along a young receiver.
Yeah, the truth is, Xavier Worthy will be, in my opinion, I think he'll be a productive NFL wide receiver, but it won't be because he set the record for the 40-yard dash at the combine. And it won't. No. And I don't think his frame will keep him from becoming a productive NFL wide receiver because it is such a nuanced evaluation. Like we were just talking about the kid Keon Coleman from Florida State. I was looking at his – because they actually measure – they actually track how fast you run when you run routes at the combine too. Like track your speed.
Oh, his go route speed?
Yeah. He had the second fastest go route speed at 21.7 miles per hour. He had the second best slot strike speed at 18.4 miles per hour. He had a dagger route of 18.1. That was fourth. And he had a slant route of 19.4 miles per hour. That was third overall. But his 40 was 15th overall. it's an archaic, antiquated way to measure way how fast a player is playing and their speed of the game and football speed. Now we have advanced analytics. We have advanced metrics to tell us exactly what football speed is, to quantify it. We've been debating football speed for decades, and now we have the technology to quantify it, to define it, to identify it, and yet let's run that 40-yard dash, y'all, and that'll determine whether you're going to be a great receiver or not. It's just not – and by the way, like I said, I think Xavier Worthy will be a productive receiver in the NFL, but it's not because of the 40-yard dash. It's because of the way that he uses his speed to threaten defensive backs, and also using his speed – and this is a guy that accelerates and decelerates and gets in and out of breaks really, really well. He's a precision route runner on top of the speed. So that's what's going to make him a productive wide receiver in the NFL. The 40-yard dash, I'll tell you what he gets credit for in the 40. I'll tell you what he got credit for, guys. And this is what he should get credit for. He's a competitor. He's a hell of a competitor. And that's what the NFL scouts loved and wanted to see from him. Steve Sarkisian admitted this. When they asked Steve Sarkisian, you know, what do you look for when you're recruiting? And Steve Sarkisian, here's a quote. He said, the first thing I look for in recruiting, and I know this sounds odd, I try to identify really unique competitors. Forget the skill set. Naturally, we're there for your size, length, and speed, whatever. But is he a competitive human being? That's what he asked. Is he a competitive human being? That dude is actually ready to run a 4.25 on the first attempt and could have easily decided, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I already showed y'all I'm a fast human being. I was clocked as the fastest player in college football in 2023. I ran a 4.25, fifth fastest time in the history of the NFL Combine. I'm good, baby. But no, he told the sideline reporter, no, I want to break the record. So it says two things to me. His competitive spirit is unbelievable. He's got the competitive sickness. He wants to compete. He wants to put on the show. He wants to perform for the man. And by the way, he can perform under pressure, because there was a lot of pressure on him after saying, hey, I want to break that record. Nope, this is a guy that went out there with all the pressure mounting and had his best performance. NFL scouts love that, because that means that guy is clutch. He can handle the pressure. And that's what the combine is all about, guys, applying pressure and seeing how you perform. But also, he's an ultimate competitor. He wants to compete in every damn thing, and he wants to win it, even if it's a 40-yard dash or whatever it may be. And I think the third thing that it shows you, that dude must have been running low 4.2s in workouts, guys, because that's the only way you can have confidence that you're going to run a 4.25. But I'm faster than that. I'm faster than that. The only way you feel borderline arrogant and cocky that you're faster than that, which he did, is you've been running low 4.2s in workouts. That means this dude has probably run at one time, guys, faster than a 4.21 in workouts.
Yeah. Because that's probably not his best time ever. So, like, that's something when you go and look at a guy like him, and it also shows a work ethic that, like, you can have a goal and be able to get to that goal and perform when you need to at that point. So, just everything across the board stacks up so well for Worthy. And just for, I mean, hell, when I saw A.D. Mitchell run, like, a 4.35, I was like, man, what is Worthy going to run? Because, like, you know that X is faster than A.D. And when I mean, at the time, I was like, man, AD probably just helped himself more than any other guy in the entire draft, at least of all the wide receivers, because, like, you have a big body traditional frame and you run a 4.35. But then it was like, oh, well, X one-upped him. So couldn't be a better day for Texas fans when following the combine.
I think what it says about X too, Rod, just overall, not just the 40 specifically, but I don't know if you want to call it mental toughness, you know, what, however you want to label it, for him to go through everything he went through his sophomore year. And when he was dropping passes and, you know, hey, I know we were critical of him on this podcast. A lot of people were critical of him. I'm not going to go revisionist history and say, oh, yeah, we always believed him. No, I was one of the people that was critical of Xavier Worthy. He didn't publicly complain. He didn't piss and moan like a lot of people would. He didn't hop in the portal. He didn't try to get out of town. No, what he did was he buckled down, worked his ass off, and left here as an All-American who helped Texas win a conference championship and get to the CFP. So I think just the total package. And Rod, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, typically now when guys go through draft prep, this is why you'll see some you'll see bodies change, bodies transform. Where, man, that guy looks a little different than what he played at. I'm gonna guess X probably didn't do a ton of weight work. In other words, you know, he probably could have run the 40 and trained for a few specific things, knowing that, hey, I'm going to really work on these things. And, you know, maybe I'll do whatever, three cone drill. Maybe I'll do that at pro day. Right. But I just want to train. If I knock these few things out, I'm going to win the combine pretty much.
Yep.
So, and it just, I think, you know, you've hit a point at the combine where it used to be a big deal if somebody wasn't going to compete. Now, if a quarterback does throw that, I don't want to say it raises a red flag, but that's going to raise some eyebrows. Like, wow, he's actually willing to go throw. I think you just got people have to change. You got to reprogram your brain in terms of how you think about the combine and pro day and what guys are going to do, what times they're going to stand on, where they want to place importance. But I, Matt, you said it, man, it couldn't have been a bigger weekend for the program. It couldn't have been a bigger weekend for Xavier Worthy, man, for him to go do what he did. And I think you put the whole package together. I think that's what goes into feeling like he could have a productive career. And just a couple of other nuggets. I went and looked up, just for S's and G's, I went and looked up Marquise Goodwin's pro career. I don't think it's any coincidence that Marquise Goodwin's most productive NFL season was in 2017 when he set career highs for catches. He had 56 catches. He had a little over 960 yards. I don't think it's any coincidence that he did it in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan.
Yep, Shanahan.
And you look at the rest of Marquise Goodwin's career and the numbers just aren't there like that. And I know both of you pointed out next-gen stats and how tracking data has changed since 2017. 2017, for what we're talking about, and Rod, you brought up how we've been doing this for decades, and now we've got better verifiable ways of doing this, ways that actually translate to playing football. John Ross was drafted in 2017, so he ran that 40 in 2017. You think about whether it's catapult technology, whatever it is, how far that stuff has come in the last 7 years. I think now it's almost like in the recruiting industry, yeah, we still get some things wrong, but you're seeing a higher hit rate just because we have more tools to go on. I think if you see these really fast receivers drafted higher and you see a more of a success rate, I think it's just going to be because teams have more tools to go off of rather than just looking at the 40 and thinking it's going to translate.
Yep, I totally agree with you. It's just more information, more data, smarter people making these decisions. I'm with you 100%. I think we're probably on the verge of this becoming a more common thing for receivers of this size to be drafted higher. Tank Dell was drafted in third round last year. Tank Dell was great for the Texans.
Yeah,
but he was a third round guy because they didn't want to draft him higher. And it's because of the frame. I think the NFL, because it's becoming more of a passing league, and you can't help me. You can't come down and waylay a wide receiver anymore. I mean, they don't promote intimidation and physicality anymore and violence in the game. They're promoting points and passing. So I think more and more there'll be a space for those guys, the small-ish wide receivers, the Sark special, if you will, the Steve Sarkisian special. Yeah. There'll be more opportunities for those guys to be drafted higher.
You know what? When I think about guys, sorry, Matt, but you know, when I think about, we talk about guys that were ahead of their time, and man, I think one guy, man, I would love to, it's hard to ask in a press conference because you're limited time. I would love to ask Sark, man, if you could have gotten your hands on Eric Metcalf, what could you have done with that guy? And if I'm Eric Metcalf, how pissed off am I that I just came along like 30 years too early? Like if Eric Metcalf was in today's NFL, he'd be a better version of what Christian McCaffrey is. He would be an all pro type guy, not just as a return guy, but however you want to use him, he'd never leave the field.
Totally agree. I totally agree. I've had that conversation actually on the radio show, and I've had it with other lifetime Longhorns like myself about Eric Metcalf. I'm with you. Eric Metcalf still to this day, it's actually the last two players that actually were able to rush for at least 30 rushes in a season. 40 rushes and 30 receptions in a season. I call it the 30-40 club. The last guys to do it were, and which is crazy. Chris Obenaya did in 2008, and Eric Metcalf did it twice in his career.
Yeah,
where he was a part of the 30-40 club. Guys, usually it's like 10 or 15 guys per season in the nation that are a part of the 30-40 club. You've had two players for Texas in the last, I don't know, when Eric Metcalf, like 30, the last 30 some 35 years or so to do
88 was his last year. Yeah.
Yeah.
You think about it too, Rod, like in the late 80s, Texas wasn't exactly reinventing the wheel on offense.
No.
Right.
No.
They weren't exactly a quarterback or an offensive skill factory at that point. So when you went into games, everybody knew Eric Metcalf's getting the ball, and he still was one of the best players in the country.
Oh man, I'm sorry. I just saw my timeline that Quandre Diggs got cut. That's crazy.
Oh no.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Changing of the guard up there in Seattle.
I literally did. I'm sorry, guys. I got distracted because I'm supposed to meet with Quandre. We're gonna interview him with our Third and Longhorns podcast, I believe, for South Yeah, for South by Southwest, we're going to have him as a special guest. We're doing a live broadcast, and I saw he just got cut.
Rod, they the Seahawks, I'm looking at Tom Pelissero, they released Quandre and Jamal Adams.
Yeah, your boy's mind is blown. I cannot believe they released both of them. Jamal Adams, I understand. Why are you releasing Quandre?
Yeah, he's overpaid.
He's overpaid. He underperforms his contract. Quandre actually outperforms his contract most of the time.
Yeah.
That is really interesting. That's really interesting. Okay.
Yeah, new coaching staff scenario there is when just cleaning house, I guess. But yeah, the only
hey,
other
let
nugget-
me say this. Hold on about Quandre. Let me just say there might be a pro football franchise in the state of Texas outside of Houston that has put all into safety that could really use some safety help that might be able to use Quandre. I'm just saying.
Man, I bet he'll be playing. What you talking about? I'm a Texas fan. I'll take him today. I'm a Texas fan. I don't give a damn. I know we got the kid from Baylor who's really good. I like Jalen Petrie, but other than that, I'll take him at safety in H-Town.
All arm wrestling for it, Rod. Whoever wins arm wrestling match.
Seriously, I'll take him right now, man. That dude's unbelievable. Wow.
And then people are like, no, Jeff, don't take that. Rod's going to beat you. Yeah, trust me, I wouldn't take that. Rod's older than me. Rod's closer to that old man strength at this point in his life than I am.
Oh yeah. Now I got a kid. So you need to get dad strength. God gives you a little dad strength just so you can do all the things you need to do when you get a kid. And I got some dad strength with my old man strength now. So hoping that pays off.
You know what's really changed with being a dad now? My wife and I was this the other day. My reflexes and my reaction time have gotten like insanely better since I had a kid.
It just shows you care about something. Before, you were just whatever, indifferent.
I've gone from like a three-toed sloth to like I'm Cal Ripken in his prime, just like picking stuff left and right. You know? Wow, what the hell happened to me?
I've seen those videos. Have you ever saved your daughter potentially from like catastrophe?
Oh yeah, like something falls off a shelf or whatever. Yes.
That's what I'm talking about, bro.
Yeah, man. Quick reflows, quick. I could trust me. It's like a fight or flight thing. I don't know, man. I could.
It is. Yeah. That's exactly what it is, bro. It's evolution. It literally is evolution. There's no. Honestly, to get us back on schedule, that's what the combine represents. Evolution. These Proof, athletes yes. are getting faster. Athletes are getting faster. God. Period. They are just way faster than they used to be when I went to the combine. You had eight cornerbacks ran under 4.3. Ran in the 4.3s, which is nuts. Like, what the hell? Eight of y'all ran in the 4.3s? That's crazy. Back in the day, if I ran a 4.3, dude, your boy would have skyrocketed up draft boards. Now it's like, that's just common. That's what DBs do. It's wild what's happening, man.
You know what? I mean, to that point, just looking at the numbers right now in front of me, I still had up one of the shuttles. It's like the top 23 shuttle times were all within the last 7 years. You know, it's like you ended up having Worthy barely missed out on being a top 25 all-time performers. There are two guys at 148 that were from like 07 and 2010. When you look at Worthy, his vertical is like the 17th best vertical in the history of the combine for all wide receivers. Another one talking about the evolution of it. In the history of the combine, this is for Adonai, but if you had some of wide receivers that were at least 6'2", 205, and ran a 4.35 or less, there's only been one ever before AD, and it was DK Metcalf.
Yeah, that's a great stat.
You know, I think about this, though, Rod. You mentioned the 40 times. You talk about evolution. Part of it is, too, we talk about technology. A lot of these guys, like I know Xavier Worthy, some of these guys have been in – you know, track programs going back to when they were probably single digits in terms of age. They got training. They've been with private trainers at the high school level. And granted, we're not even talking about how much college strength conditioning programs have changed. You know, it's weird to think about, Rod. Like you probably, I think you're just seeing more guys reach their physical peak in their early 20s than they otherwise would have. Like, Rod, honestly, like you probably never reached your physical peak, like what like the absolute ceiling of what you could have been. And I can say that for 99% of the guys you played with in the league. Like, just there are very few guys that got there. They had to be self-starters and do it on their own. But now everybody has a higher chance of reaching that ceiling because of not only how early you start, but just the sophisticated methods throughout your teen years when your body's really developing, that you just didn't have that, you know, 20 years ago.
I totally agree. And on top of all that stuff you just mentioned, because you're right, now you have the pre-combine process, which is now a multi-billion-dollar process with athletes who are training for the combine specifically before, you know, the combine for these events and stuff. So you're right. I mean, I agree with that. That's a great point, man. You're right. I don't think I probably never reached it. And you're right. Most of the guys in my era probably never reached it, because now, you know, there are just way more technological advances, way more knowledge, way more information about how to push these players to their peak. I mean, in 2004, a year after I was drafted, you had 11 players total run the 40 in under 4.4. 11 total. Guys, in the last 2 years, you're at 31 in 2022. You're at 20 in 2023. You've had 51 players run under 4.4 in the 40 in the last 2 years. You're at 11 total in the year 2004.
It's crazy. It's nuts. That's gosh.
Evolution, my man. Evolution.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I kind of want to wrap up on this. Nothing, you know, we'll get back to Texas spring football next week, but I've got this kind of, I heard Nick Saban suggest this, Rod, many years ago. And as with a lot of things Nick Saban suggests, I heard it and I was like, that sounds like a hell of an idea. I think it would work. Some type of mock draft process / combine, maybe do it on campus or do it regionally. Like, I know the Big 12 is doing the pro day, so you're eliminating or the regional combine, whatever, and eliminating a lot of the campus pro days. Could you do something like that for underclassmen? Because we talk about giving guys data. I'm all for giving guys data to where, you know, let's say I'm DJ Campbell, right? I'm going into a draft eligible year. I can go through a process in the spring or summer and go into my junior year thinking I've got a realistic shot to get to leave here and get drafted, or man, I don't even need to think about the league because I got feedback that I need to work on so much that I just need to put my head down and work hard. Guys are going to take information however they want it. I'm just all for doing whatever you can to just make sure guys have access to that information. You think it's feasible to do something for underclassmen at some point here in the near future?
Honestly, that's a great point. You know, I think you can do it. I think there is a way to do it. And to add to your point, this is the crazy thing about the combine process, because the NFL notoriously is not an entity. It's not an organization that likes to share information. Notoriously, the NFL is kind of like a lot of other clandestine organizations. They believe information is power. They want to keep it, right? They want to keep that information for themselves. When I was at the combine, guys, in 2003, you didn't learn what your measurements were, your 40 was, your drill and testing times. You had no idea what they were unless you asked the person who was in charge of the testing. And most of the time, they didn't have it. They didn't have access to it. They didn't like, I don't know. That's up. I mean, that goes with the chain of command. I have no idea what's going on. And even up until like 7 years ago, guys didn't even know what they ran in the 40 right after they ran the 40 at the actual combine. You didn't know. It was last year they put up the actual times, the testing times on the Jumbotron at Indy, at the combine. They put them up on the Jumbotron so that everybody could see it, because it's a spectator sport now, right? They invite people who come and spectate the NFL combine, so they wanted them to see them. This year was the first time they actually put the 40 times up where the people who ran the 40 could see their times come up on the Jumbotron. So to your point about sharing information, hell, we just got to the point, Jeff, we're sharing information with the guys at the combine.
Right.
They just got to that point where they were willing to say, all right, you did run a 4.22. Before 2 years ago, guys, nobody knew what the hell they were running. You better just wait. Yeah. You just hoping that God, that you ran a fast time and that your fundamentals and technique wasn't flawed. But other than that, you didn't have that information. Now I'm with you. I think everybody wants to operate from a more informed stance, and they want to operate with more information and better data. I think the NFL is now starting to figure it out slowly but surely.
Yeah, and you mentioned it becoming a spectator aspect is really what was able to get them to evolve just that atmosphere. So it was so cool to see Worthy whenever he breaks the line, and then when he can see the Jumbotron and he starts waving his arms like he did after he scored against Alabama in his celebration, because he was happy he just broke the time that he wanted. And this is from Next Gen Stats, but not only on the time, but if we're talking about peak speed within the 4.21 or within the 40-yard dash. I retweeted it. If people want to look at it, it's from Next Gen Stats. Worthy hit 24.41 miles an hour, which was by far the fastest. The second fastest was Adonai Mitchell at 23.84, was his peak speed inside his 4.34. And then Bama, Jermaine Burton, who burned Texas on the deep ball in that third quarter, he was the third fastest guy. And then Jerry Rice's son, Brendan Rice, was the fourth fastest.
The fun part of this for me, though, is to think about, and I think about Sark in terms of recruiting, because they, you know, it's really hard for those guys to get verified times. That's why track times and jumps are so big, because it's pretty much some of the only verified data that they've got. And we've kind of gone through that. I know our guys at 24/7 Sports have talked about, man, maybe early on when we started really digging into the verifiable data, maybe lean too much to it, because you're still going to have those arguments, man. And I know NFL front offices are going to deal with it in the draft, and I'm sure Sark deals with it now. Of, you know, you've got prospects, maybe you've got two different corners you're looking at, and maybe one side of the room says, look at all the numbers, like, we think he can be great, and then the other side of the room saying, this kid don't pass the eye test, like, he doesn't have functional, like, he can't cover anybody, why are we going to take this guy? And the arguments that ensue, because at the end of the day, you still have humans making the final decision on whether to offer a guy or whether to draft a guy. It's fascinating because you've got more information than ever, but at the end of the day, it still comes down to, man, are you really going to make the right decision or not?
Yep. Human error. No question.
I love it, man. I dig it. Hey, by the way, Sark actually, you know, I don't know what term I'm looking for, but we've talked about this staff, this organization kind of got people getting plucked and going to different places. Bobby Merritt taking the job where he's going to go be the general manager of football at Rice. That's another person that was really, really important in terms of what he did. But, you know, Rod, with it's a unique time. We talked about it several weeks ago, you know, with Nick Saban out of the game. You know, coaches are going to have to look somewhere. I mean, the car wash model can be replicated, or maybe it's not the full on Nick Saban car wash model. Maybe it's just, hey, I can go here and kind of get, you know, my graduate level football education, if you will. I think Sark's in a pretty unique place to where maybe Texas can be that guy. If you do want to be at some point, you know, a GM of a football program, or maybe an NFL front office guy, like, hey, I can go to Texas and work my way up. And if I do work my way up there, that's going to be more important than anything else I can do in terms of getting my name out there and getting experience on the player personnel side.
Yeah, I mean, just I think now there's so much responsibility now that coaches have at the college level. Just makes sense that you hire more personnel guys that you trust, and you empower them, give them more responsibility. That's why everybody's getting the GM title now, because you actually do need a GM at the college level, because you know, the free market has hit college more and more. I mean, I know people don't like it, but the truth is, guys, you know, college football is becoming the NFL. Y'all don't like it. That's why we're getting the rule changes about the helmet communication, that helmet to sideline communication. They're going to copy the NFL model verbatim. They're about to bring in a 2-minute warning too, because, you know, basically they want more ad space, more ad revenue. That's part of the 2-minute warning. Y'all don't like it, but it's true. Got the tablets on the sideline now. The truth is, all of your big brands and all of your major talent in college football is being consolidated into two conferences, just like the AFC and the NFC, except it's Big Ten and SEC. You can say what you want, but that's what's happening. I mean, you're going more and more toward the NFL model. Some people don't like it because they like the old school way of college football. But I think with the free market hitting with NIL, and that's why you're starting to see more and more of that general manager tag thrown around, and that label thrown around with different universities, big and small, right? He's going to Rice. Hey, you got Rice, you got UCLA, you got Ole Miss, you got Texas. Everybody's going to have a general manager at one point. And I just think it's because we're getting more and more toward a pro model of college football.
Yep. And if they have just a pet peeve of mine, if we're going more pro model, get rid of, if your knee's down, you're down. Have you be tackled to be tackled. That would be nice. That just those little inconsistencies, like when you watch football with your friends and like, I thought you could do this. And it was like, no, that's a college rule. Pro, streamline it all. Let's at least worry about having your knee down. Get rid of that one.
Rod, I'll say this about people not liking the changes to college football fans who think their college football has been tainted or whatever. Look, here's the bottom line as far as I'm concerned. Everybody now is just finding out, you know, how the sausage is made at this point.
Pretty much. So
now that you know how it's made, you can either keep eating it and enjoying it, which I am, or change your diet. That's the two options you've got.
Pretty much. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and I would yeah, I like maybe that. Venture to guess, like, you would think people would enjoy that the players that are doing all the things that you love to watch and spend your Saturdays focused on actually are getting something out of it instead of just the old rich guys getting to keep it all for themselves beforehand.
Wasn't it one of the great philosophers of our time, Dave Chappelle, who said once, you should know what's in the hot dogs you eat?
Yep. Or maybe Cartman, student athletes.
Student athletes. You're dead right.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Matt. I've been, as I'm working at night, you know, I go to bed around 11:30 midnight. My TV's been left on Comedy Central for some South Park way too many nights during the week lately. So
yeah, fit that one in, and the Bill Belichick, always to know the white people method. If you haven't seen that one in a while,
yeah, there's so many good ones. I to go down the South Park rabbit hole. We need like 3 weeks of shows to do that, but
The Augie Garrido episode's great. The Augie Garrido episode's one of my favorite. I mean, when else has college football made it into pop culture mainstream, or college baseball? Excuse me.
When Mr. Mackey's telling Tooth Decay he's gonna blow his big shot. Oh man,
it's cool.
All right, before we get any more off the rails, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod, we appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother. Anytime.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody at 24/7 Sports, the 24/7 Sports Podcast Network, and the Horns 24/7 Podcast feed, where you can get each and every episode of Longhorn Blitz whenever it drops on Wednesdays. Just search Horns 24/7. That's Horns 247, no dashes, slashes, or spaces. Anywhere you get your podcast, click that follow button to get Longhorn Blitz. And thanks to Matt, get all of our archives. Our classic interviews and shows are available on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
For the Horns 24/7 family, for the Longhorn Blitz family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again on the next episode.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.